Well, hello again. My name is Reagan Gilliland, and I'm the new pastor over adult discipleship, and I'm thrilled to be here at Christ United. Although I have to admit, it's kind of a strange transition. It's weird having your first sermon in an empty room, but I worked really hard on my outfit today, and so I trust that you are wearing your best pajamas this morning on your couch or wherever you are. Again, it's all about professionalism, although I am wearing sweatpants on the bottom. You just can't see. So last week, Chris kicked off our new series called Summer Blockbusters, and he kicked it off with Star Wars, A New Hope, and it's a great sermon, even if you aren't a Star Wars fan, and I'm not saying that because he's my new boss, and I really need him to like me, but it really is a good sermon talking about good and evil, and he looked at a passage in Isaiah, so I would encourage you to go check it out. So again, if you don't like Star Wars, you'll still love it. Again, Star Wars, I don't know why they didn't release it in order. That would make it a lot simpler and easier to follow, but clearly it didn't hurt them in the blockbuster, and George Lucas knew what he was doing. But today we're going to be looking at the summer blockbuster Jurassic Park and looking at a passage from the book of Ezekiel. So let's go ahead and get started with that. So when I was a teenager, I went through a thrift shop phase, which I feel like everyone goes through at least once in their lifetime, although now I feel like stores just look like they're a thrift shop and they're very expensive. I'm looking at you, Urban Outfitters. I don't know why I have to pay $65 for a plain white t-shirt, but whatever it is. But I just think it's interesting that fashion makes a comeback often. I remember when I was a teenager, you know, I'd be leaving the house and my mom would always make a comment of like, it's so fascinating how you think that's cool because I used to wear that back in the day. And of course, as a teenager, I probably rolled my eyes and said something very sarcastic like, not everything will come back, Mom. I've seen what you guys used to wear. And then a while ago, I started seeing things like high-waisted pants and then scrunchies, which are the things that are supposed to be in your hair but often are worn on your wrist. And then the biggest offender, the thing that I really struggled with, were those huge metal glasses that everyone started suddenly wearing. I think we have a picture of it. Now, I apologize if you are wearing those glasses right now at home, but I feel like there are certain people that can pull it off. I think if you're a certain age, you can, you know, you look great in them, but I think it's always these really tiny and petite girls or really beanpole kind of guys that are wearing these huge glasses that actually weigh more than they do. And I just think, wear glasses that fit. Like, it's not that hard. And most of the time, they don't even have a prescription. And maybe it's because my dad is an optometrist and I'm really picky about what you wear on your face. But I just think these glasses look ridiculous. Now, unless you are my 4-year-old daughter, Andy Jane, who loves to wear my husband's first pair of glasses, which we have a picture of that. She can pull these off. No one else can. But again, I just think it's funny how trends tend to come back. And then some things don't. They really are just for one season. And so I started thinking, like, how come some things get popular again? How do some things trend? How do they seem to be the next best thing, even though they've already been around? There's been often things that I've thought, that's surely a goner. That's never coming back. And then things like Backstreet Boys or New Kids on the Block have a reunion tour. And sure, they dance a little slower. They have to ice a lot after their performance. But hey, good for them for making a comeback. And so for us, I think about how do we know it's a time and a place to bring something or someone back. In the 1994 blockbuster Jurassic Park, a very wealthy man, Hammond, discovers a way to bring dinosaurs back. And I think every kid goes through a dinosaur phase. I know some grown men still love to play dinosaurs, like my husband, who once won a Velociraptor impersonation contest at Alamo Drafthouse. But I think to have that discovery of having dinosaurs, to say that would be cool would probably be an understatement. But if you've seen the movie, you know there are a few glitches. So Haman brings three people to come give the stamp of approval so he can officially open the park. And he invites mathematician and chaos theorist Ian Malcolm, played by Jeff Goldman, paleontologist Dr. Alan Grant, played by Sam Neill, who I always think is Kevin Costner's brother, and then paleobotanist Dr. Ellie Sattler, played by Laura Dern. Now, Haman's hope is to provide an incredible experience that will just blow them out of the water. But what is quickly is found is are gaps and holes and a lot of consequences of certain choices. If you've seen the movie, you know that there's this big storm. There's a guy that's trying to steal the embryos of the dinosaurs and sabotage the park and maybe sell those for a big profit. And because he's the IT guy, he does all these things that have glitches, and then he turns off the power grid. So it makes it very easy for the dinosaurs to escape. And I don't know if you knew this, but dinosaurs are very massive and very strong, and some we would call feisty, I guess. And so there are epic hunting scenes and quite a few jump scare moments in a movie. And so if you're looking for more kid-friendly, I would maybe do The Land Before Time. But you're watching this movie and you think, what a fantastic idea. But doesn't Haman know this is a terrible idea? Why would he bring something that was dead back to life? And so today we're going to look at a fairly well-known passage in the book of Ezekiel found in chapter 37, 1 through 14, which later on I'll kind of explain with a broad brush what has happened in Ezekiel right before this point. So would you join and read with me in Ezekiel 37? The Lord took hold of me, and I was carried away by the Spirit of the Lord to a valley filled with bones. He led me all around among the bones that covered the valley floor. They were scattered everywhere across the ground and were completely dried out. Then he asked me, "Son of man, can these bones become living people again?" O sovereign Lord, I replied, "You alone know the answer to that." Then he said to me, "Speak a prophetic message to these bones and say, 'Dry bones, listen to the word of the Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says. Look, I am going to put breath into you and make you live again. I will put flesh and muscles on you and cover you with skin. I will put breath into you and you will come to life. Then you will know that I am the Lord.' So I spoke this message just as he told me. Suddenly, as I spoke, there was a rattling noise all across the valley. The bones of each body came together and attached themselves as complete skeletons. Then as I watched, muscles and flesh formed over the bones. The skin formed to cover their bodies, but they still had no breath in them. Then he said to me, 'Speak a prophetic message to the wind, son of man. Speak a prophetic message and say, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Come, O breath from the four winds, breathe into these dead bones so that they may live again.' So I spoke the message as he commanded me, and breath came into their bodies. They all came to life and stood up on their feet, a great army. Then he said to me, 'Son of man, these bones represent the people of Israel. They are saying, we have become old, dry bones. All hope is gone. Our nation is finished. Therefore, prophesy to them and say, this is what the sovereign Lord says. O my people, I will open your graves of exile and cause you to rise again. Then I'll bring you back to the land of Israel. When this happens, O my people, you will know that I am the Lord. I will put my spirit in you, and you will live again and return home to your own land. Then you will know that I, the Lord, have spoken, and I have done what I said. Yes, the Lord has spoken." So to give a little background to what's been happening. So Ezekiel was a priest living in Jerusalem during the first Babylonian attack. Now, at this point, when they were attacked, the city was not destroyed. The temple was still in place. But a portion of the people were taken out and to Babylon. And that story is found in 2 Kings. But the book of Ezekiel starts 5 years after this capture. And this vision from God happens to Ezekiel on his 30th birthday, which was when he would have been installed as a priest in Jerusalem. So on his 30th birthday, God commissioned him as a prophet, which, in case you didn't know, prophets were not very well liked. They were probably pretty much hated, and no one listened to them. And so you thought your 30th birthday was depressing. I think Ezekiel probably takes the cake on that. And so God tells Ezekiel through these visions that, you know, Israel has broken this covenant, and that punishment and destruction and suffering is going to happen. And you can read more of what Ezekiel has to do. He kind of has to do this weird street theater and things. Again, no one's listening to what he's saying. But he continues to have these visions, and it seems kind of gloom and doom. And then suddenly in chapter 33, Jerusalem has fallen and the temple is destroyed. This is a pretty low point. But then in chapter 34, God talks to Ezekiel about a new David. And then in chapter 36, he talks about people getting a new heart, a new spirit. A beautiful scripture that I would encourage you to read. And then we get to chapter 37, where there's these dry bones. Again, they're very dead. They're very, very dry. And they represent Israel's spiritual state, this literal exile and death. Now, I can't imagine seeing at this site, but I have to imagine that it was pretty devastating to see. These bones, they were dead. There's nothing to identify these people by. This is not a Princess Bride moment where they were mostly dead. They were dead. And these bones were scattered like a jigsaw puzzle, and God asked Ezekiel, which, if you think about it, is a pretty absurd question. He says to Ezekiel, can these bones live? Which, if I were Ezekiel, I probably would have replied with something pretty sarcastic and said, I don't know, do you see what I'm seeing right now? But because Ezekiel is a much better person than I am, he says, Sovereign Lord, only you know. Now, before I get kind of too far into this sermon, I hope you know that some topics, some things, instructions we give, you have to kind of carve with a scalpel. And I think you'll kind of know what I'm saying as I go along. And so I want you to hear me clearly and not think that I'm assuming things. And so don't assume that I'm saying things that maybe I'm not. But I want us to think about how some of us have looked over a situation, maybe a relationship, and said, gosh, this is over. Or maybe you've thought to yourself, there's no way to heal from this. There's no way to get out of this dark place. There's no recovery. There's no way to rebound. You look and basically it's like a valley of dry bones. And this is where the tension is for me. I've looked at those situations and I think, goodness, what is the right choice? Do I keep fighting? Do I keep trying? Do I keep working at something? Do I need to try to bring something back to life? Do I need to try to restore, or do I need to let it be? Do I need to let it go? Have you ever felt that way? See, the founder of Jurassic Park, Hammond, looks at this mosquito that's been dead for millions of years, and it's in this hard amber, and they have to dig and dig and to find it, and they have to use this precision to draw the blood out of the dead mosquito and construct DNA and fill it with frog's DNA to fill the holes and gaps in it. The fact that Hammond looks at this dead bug and thinks there can be life. But what's different between the scene of God and Ezekiel looking at the bones and Hammond looking at this mosquito is that Hammond uses control and manipulation and an unhealthy dose of wealth and power to make happen what he wants to happen. He has to force a lot in order for this to come to life. And because of it, there's quite a few problems and hiccups. But I have to ask myself, sometimes I'm the exact same way. I look at a situation, I look at a relationship, and I force it and I manipulate it for my own gain. I think often we only look at what's going to be beneficial for us. Jurassic Park reveals to me that often we do something without thinking about the consequences, and we only think about ourselves. We can get really tempted with power and authority, and we don't see the pushback or the harm, and we don't listen to the voices that are maybe saying, it's not a good idea. And so sometimes we have to quit. Sometimes we have to walk away. Sometimes we have to let something go. But the bigger issue, I think, is that we have to listen to God. Haman wanted to call all the shots. And God is saying to us, it's not yours to decide. Only I know. Now, can you imagine if we could breed dinosaurs again? That would be pretty incredible. But I love what Jeff Goldman's character, Malcolm, essentially says. He says, even though we have the ability, even though we know how to do it, should we? So maybe this is a time where you ask yourself the same question, well, should I? Maybe it's a question like, should I go back to that relationship even though it wasn't the healthiest? Should I go back to my old job even though I wasn't challenged and I'm not doing what I'm called to do? Should I take this promotion even though it would highly impact my family life? Should I hang out with that group of people even though they're not allowing me to become the person I want to be? Should I take credit for this idea even though it wasn't mine? Should I cut corners or cheat a little bit? Should I lie because I know I won't get caught? Now, some of these may seem minor and even petty to you, but I think every day we have decisions to make whether we need to go back to things, control or change things, or keep the status quo. And we make all those decisions without the guidance or asking of God's leading. We don't say, only you know, Lord. Now, does God use his power to create this scene in Ezekiel? Does God use his power in a lot of ways? Absolutely. But what I don't see is this manipulation or this greed or this sense of absolute control. In this story, God ultimately is wanting to seek a relationship with his people. He wants to know them. He wants them to know him. And what makes it all come together is God's breath of life. God's breath is what makes these bones live again. I mean, think about it, breath is gentle. I mean, think about a child sleeping or maybe a grandparent who fell asleep, although in my experience, grandparents don't really have a gentle, quiet breath. But that in and out. You know, God doesn't tell Ezekiel, hey, go pick up the bones and shout at them, wake up or get up. It's his gentle breath. Now, I can't tell you whether you need to go back to something or change things or keep things the same. That's not mine to offer. But I pray we can be like Ezekiel when we look out at something, not knowing whether it needs resurrection or change, and say, only you know, Lord. And then we wait and we listen. We don't need to force or rush the process. When Ezekiel first prophesied to the bones, it wasn't automatically these human bodies jumped up. It was bone to bone, all 206 bones coming together, and then it was flesh, and then it was muscles and tissue, and then the skin, and then the breath. If we want to be patient and obedient to God doing something, we can't jump in all the time and interrupt the process. Jurassic Park kind of shows what happens when we try to jump in and intervene. What is really so beautiful about the invitation of a relationship with Christ is that he doesn't seek to control you. He doesn't seek to force you or manipulate you to love him. In Jurassic Park, Haman wants to be there when every dinosaur is born so it can connect to him. It's this obsession to have control and to have a bond. But with Christ, we're invited in on our own time with our own decision. Another big thing between God and Haman is that Haman creates these dinosaurs to live in captivity. And then in Ezekiel, God is leading Israel out of captivity into freedom, a new beginning. As a close, I want to remind you that God breathed that life. And after he did that things weren't the same. He wasn't wanting to do the same thing again. This was a new beginning, a new creation, a new chance for the people of Israel. I don't think God is interested in going back and doing the same thing again. And neither should we. We are a people called to participate in this world that God continues to create, and the one that God is continually doing a new thing. And so, friends, don't settle for the old or even the current. Join in with the new thing that God is doing. Amen.